Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman, trying to get through to Michael Parenti, my guest today. Michael, I do hope we will connect today. I so look forward to having you on. Michael was scheduled on the weekend immediately after the time that I'm afraid I was unable to host for a couple of months, and I'm back, and I've been rescheduling guests like Michael, who I absolutely wanted to have on. Michael's been on this program a number of times before. I certainly wanted to get him back on and prioritized rescheduling him and others who were on my schedule, and because of illness, I simply wasn't able to follow through with the programs. We'll keep trying to get Michael, and hopefully we'll get him, and we'll continue on the program. I don't think he needs any introduction. He certainly is a well-known figure for many, many years. He's written over 20 books. They've been published in many languages. He writes many articles. He's on the right side of history, and he's also a valued contributor to the book that I edited and contributed to on Ukraine called Flashpoint in Ukraine, How the U.S. Drive for Hegemony Risk World War III. It's no exaggeration. What's going on in that part of the world is very, very scary stuff. Conflict has been going on since it erupted last November in Maidan or Independence Square in Kiev. It had nothing to do with ordinary Ukrainians fighting for their liberation. It had everything to do with Washington orchestrating a coup d'etat against a legitimately democratically elected government. Not the kind of government I would want. Not a decent government, not a pure government, a government deeply corrupted, but democratically elected. It's up to the Ukrainian people alone, all of the people, through the ballot box, through peaceful legal means, to choose the government that'll lead them. They might make a mistake, they might choose a good one, they might choose a bad one. Then it's up to them to go back to the ballot box and vote again and make their own choice. It's not the way Washington does things. Washington usurps power. It believes democracy has no place in its plans. It rejects democracy at home and abroad. It wants its own rules established, and it instituted, through many months of violence, a coup d'etat against the Viktor Yanukovych government. It instituted a neo-Nazi-infested fascist government. The book Flashpoint in Ukraine covers all of this in detail and much more, including the huge propaganda campaign in the West, mainly in America, supporting what demanded denunciation. And the fight for Ukraine's soul continues. Southeastern Ukrainian freedom-fighting Democrats, the people Washington and Kiev illegitimately call terrorists, separatists, pro-Russians. These people are Ukrainians. Oh, I think a lot of them are very supportive of Russia. But most of them are Ukrainians. They want to stay Ukrainians. They want Ukraine, for all Ukrainians, to have real democracy. They reject fascism. They reject neo-Nazism. They have every right to do it. And they deserve universal support. Everybody should support them, because their struggle is our struggle. The fight for freedom and ridding countries and the world of the scourge of fascism goes way beyond the Ukrainian borders. It's ongoing right here in America. America is plagued with the scourge of fascism. And when we see what America does around the world, ousting democratically elected governments, replacing them with stooge pro-Western governments, fascist governments, governments that work against the will and the interests of their own people. We know the way America operates. It's the way it does it at home. It does the same thing abroad. It's in league with other countries that are doing the same things. Still trying to get Michael. Rogue EU partners, or NATO partners, as I like to call them, Israel. And we know what goes on in these countries. We know the wars that are waged against innocent people, slaughtered in cold blood, Israel's genocide against Gaza, Ukraine, with America's full help and encouragement, slaughter in southeastern Ukraine against its own citizens. Israel doesn't consider Palestinians Israeli citizens. I think even its own Israeli Arab citizens certainly are not treated that way, but the occupied people of Gaza are treated like subhumans. And the people, the Israeli citizens, in the state of Israel, are treated like fifth column threats. You have all of these things going on. You have America offering full support, spending billions of dollars, U.S. tax dollars, instead of dealing with homeland needs. This money goes toward waging wars against the freedom of people at home and abroad. And this is what goes on. Since I got back in gear and I'm back on my two article a day mode, I love it. I really love it. I'm back telling people what I think they need to know. I scrupulously try to tell them the truth. These are such important things happening. These wars of aggression against innocent people, freedom being destroyed in plain sight. The major media lying about it, either covering up, saying little about it, once the headlines fade, moving on to another topic, lies, big lies, nothing but lies, managed news misinformation, one repeats after another, and ordinary people suffer the most. We see what's going on in Ukraine, the suffering of the people in Ukraine. If you watch RT International, they'll show you live coverage with their people on the ground, the faces, the agony in the eyes of the Southeast Ukrainians as they're being murdered on a daily basis, dozens of them, by the repressive fascist Ukrainian forces. But the freedom-fighting Democrats, they're coming back. They're struggling. They face formidable odds against a powerful army compared to them. The Ukrainian army is no match against an army like America's or an EU country, but against ordinary people with the weapons they capture. There's no evidence to show, as Kiev claims, that Russia is supplying them with weapons with Russian forces on the ground. We know the story of humanitarian aid. I wrote two articles about it. Ukraine, NATO Secretary General, Washington, the Pentagon, other U.S. officials, State Department, accused Russia illegitimately of staging an invasion of Ukraine. What was going on? Russia was delivering humanitarian aid. It bent over backwards to comply with every wish the Ukrainian government made, everything they asked for, and then some. It didn't matter what they did. Every time they satisfied a request, another one was made. Not a request, a demand. One demand after another, unreasonable ones. It went on for days. The Russian humanitarian mission left Russia, I believe, on the 12th of August. It was stranded on the Ukrainian border on the Russian side for about a week. The Ukrainian government obstructed and blocked it with the full support and encouragement from Washington. It wants the Southeast Ukrainians deprived of essentials to life, food, drinking water, medical supplies, things they need, or they'll perish. That's the whole idea. Starve them, deprive them of medical care, bludgeon them to death, obstruct, delay, and deny. That's what was going on. Russia finally did the right thing. They acted forthrightly. They complied with every wish. They understood full well. It didn't matter what they did for how long. The aid would not get through. Lives were being lost each day because of the blockage. Putin decided to act. He deserves universal support. It was very clear the aid was humanitarian. It was no Trojan horse. It carried no weapons. It did nothing to supply the Ukrainian freedom fighters with aid to fight the fascists in Kiev. It was strictly what Russia said it was: food, drinking water, medical supplies, and other essentials to life. The trucks were open to full inspection. Some were inspected. I dare say most probably were not. But the blockage continued. Putin said no more. The Russian Foreign Ministry issued the most scathing report I ever read. It was very long, very detailed, and I quoted it heavily. They basically said enough is enough. We won't tolerate this anymore. We're delivering the financial aid, the humanitarian aid, and the trucks rolled over the border. They cleared customs. There were no guns fired. There was no violence. The Ukrainian border guards and Ukrainian forces did nothing to stop them. The trucks arrived in Lugansk. The aid was offloaded. It went into warehouses to be distributed to the people in need. The trucks were empty. They returned to Russia. the Ukrainian forces claimed they came back with stolen Ukrainian goods, materials, equipment from Ukrainian factories. They lied. There were no Ukrainian materials and equipment from factories on empty trucks. They were empty. They came to the border. They could have been inspected again. Maybe some of them were. Hopefully, there'll be more trucks that'll roll. So many hundreds of tons were wonderful to deliver, but the Ukrainians in southeastern Ukraine need a lot more. Imagine the hypocrisy from Washington. Washington, along with the Ukrainians, calling it an invasion, promising consequences for the act that Russia took. Well, Washington delivers so-called humanitarian aid through the barrel of a gun. Look what's going on in Iraq right now. Daily bombings. Obama claims he's doing more than fighting ISIS or ISIL, now known as the Islamic State. He claims it's humanitarian intervention by F-16s bombing, by special forces doing their mischief on the ground, by killing people. This is America's idea of humanitarian intervention. Russia's idea is the real thing, what people really need. And the Ukrainians in southeastern Ukraine thank Russia for what he did, for what it did, and of course, thank Vladimir Putin for giving them the aid they needed. He did the right thing. America plunders and murders and commits the grossest of hypocrisy, claiming this amounts to humanitarian aid, or the other expression used is responsibility to protect. America doesn't give a damn about either. America gives a damn about its own interests, but judge Russia by its action. It helped starving people. It helped people needing medical supplies. It did the right thing. Thank Vladimir Putin. Thank Sergei Lavrov. If any two leaders deserve Nobel Peace Prizes, it's them. If any leaders deserve life in prison without parole, it's Obama and his crowd. So we see the difference between Ukraine and what's going on in Iraq right now. And there are so many other examples. The Iraq War I, the Iraq War II, the Afghan War, the Libya War, the proxy war in Syria. And this morning I put on an article saying, Obama heading for war on Syria, question mark. Is he planning? Well, an Obama proxy war is raging. Is he planning direct intervention? It has all the earmarks of heading in that direction. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel and Joint Chiefs Chairman Martin Dempsey, on the 22nd of August, I believe, testified before Congress. And Dempsey said in so many words, in response to a question, it is impossible to defeat the Islamic State without going cross-border into Iraq. If Obama attacks Iraq, then the Islamic State is the pretext. The real target is Bashar Assad. It's replacing an independent sovereign state with an illegitimate government the way it was done in Ukraine. This is the idea. It could be that the pretext will be the Islamic State, and the war against Bashar Assad will go full scale by direct intervention. This appears to be the Obama plan. It almost happened last September, after the false flag chemical attack on the suburb of Ghouta, the Damascus suburb of Ghouta, carried out by the so-called Syrian rebels, not the Syrian people, not the Syrian army, but the rebels enlisted by Washington, extremist rebels imported from dozens of countries. They attacked Syrian citizens. They killed them with chemical weapons. Nobody knows for sure how many died, probably in the hundreds. France and Britain and America each reported different numbers by a wide margin, and I remember writing about it in detail. This was the most horrendous chemical weapons attack, but there were many others. None were committed by the Syrian military. They all were committed by proxy U.S. forces. Chemical weapons were supplied by Saudi Arabia. Some were homemade, and this thing went on time and again. But Syria has destroyed its chemical weapons now. Any pretext can be invented. The Gutta one failed. Why? Because Americans are sick and fed up with war. And they, as I said in my article, and I said it last year when I wrote about this, they, congressmen and senators were carpet bombed with anti-war emails, phone calls, protests outside their offices in Washington, in their home cities. It was overwhelming, 50 to 1, 100 to 1, 300 to 1. They literally, they in fact, cowed the Congress into not voting to get America into another war. But, of course, Obama doesn't need the vote of Congress. Obama can do what he damn pleases. And Congress has no say whatever over whether will America will or won't go to war. Claiming Congress has the right is false. Congress must vote for America to go to war. Otherwise, it's illegal. But only the Security Council has power to let one country go to war against another. And it can only do it according to the Charter of the UN. If a country in need is being attacked, then it has the right of self-defense. But again, only until the Security Council acts. If it says no, the Self-Defense Act must stop. If it says yes, it can continue. Well, the war last September never happened. It wasn't stopped, as I said then and repeated today. It was postponed. It has all the earmarks of being cranked up again. Another war, when American people, as polls show, overwhelmingly want America's wars to end, it looks like Obama is heading into another one. It looks like Syria is the latest target, going from proxy war to direct intervention. And on June 3rd, Syrians went to the polls. It was a presidential election, independently monitored, judged open, free, and fair. On June 4th, I wrote my last article before illness took me down for 2 months. I didn't know the final result, but I mentioned it in my article today. I knew Assad was overwhelmingly elected, reelected. I knew he would get at least 70% of the votes. In my own mind, I imagined around 80. He got an 88.9%, I believe it was, majority vote to reinstate him for another 7-year term. Syrians can't imagine anybody else leading them. They simply can't imagine it. And they overwhelmingly elected him. They thanked him for supporting their freedom struggle. And indeed, that's what it is. Still trying to reach Michael. Let's keep trying. Hopefully we'll get him. I'm not sure what the problem is, but hopefully we'll get him on before the program is over. And if I miss, I'll reschedule him again. I quoted from Assad's celebratory speech after his inauguration, thanking the Syrian people, thanking them for what they did. It was a very eloquent speech. I've quoted from his earlier speeches, but it was very sincere and forthright. It was the kind of speech, it came from the heart. It was real. It was honest. It's in my article with a link to the entire speech. Anybody can look it up, can read it, and see that the things America says about this man are what I call big fat lies. Syria is more a democratic country today than America is. Syria, until more recently, would best be characterized as an authoritarian country. Not a despotic country, but an authoritarian country, especially under Assad's father, Hafez. Bashar Assad is an ophthalmologist. He came to power after his father's death, I believe about 10 years ago. He's got a new 7-year term, but he got Syria's constitution changed. I wrote about it when it happened last year. Indeed, it's got wonderful provisions in it, democratic provisions in it. And at the time, the Syrian people objected to things being left out. The constitution was revised. It was put to 2 national referenda. After the first one, revisions were made. It was put to a second one. And in times of war, the Syrian people overwhelmingly on their own approved what the Assad government had done. This is what democracy looks like. This is what happened in Venezuela when Chavez came to power. The exact same thing. Syria has got a long way to go to be Venezuela. It may never be Venezuela, but it's on the right path. It's doing what Venezuelans did under Chavez. Whether it will go that far remains to be seen. Chavez had the reins for about 14 years. Assad has been in power under his new way of doing things for a fairly short period of time. He deserves support. He certainly deserves support against the fascists that want to oust him and replace him with a subservient, pro-Western, stooge government that will take away all the freedoms that Syrians have now and will turn Syria into what Iraq looks like today, what Libya looks like today, what Afghanistan looks today, not just for 3.5 years, as has gone on the way things are going now, but in perpetuity until something can happen to change things. That's what happens when America shows up. Mass slaughter and destruction follow. In Iraq, in Syria, and in Libya, I'll rephrase that. In Iraq and Afghanistan, it was direct. In Libya, it was proxy. In Syria, it's proxy. It appears to be heading for direct in Syria. And the Syrian people have already suffered horrendously, just the way the people of these other countries have and continue to be. Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, cauldrons of violence since America showed up. Cauldrons of violence. And Obama now is waging Iraq War III. The pretext is ISIS or ISIL or the Islamic State. The real war is for control of Iraq's oil, for unchallenged regional dominance. And if Obama attacks Syria, it's to remove another independent sovereign state, to control it, to isolate Iran, to make it the next target, again, in league with Israel, to go for unchallenged regional control en route to unchallenged global control. The ultimate targets, Russia, China, replacing their independent governments, again, with pro-Western stooge ones, risking global war in the process. Madness defines America's agenda. Nothing else can best describe it. Madness. Neocons infest Washington. Madness defines their agenda. They're willing to risk all for unchallenged global control, prioritizing control of resources, oil, gas, other valued ones, putting stooge governments in place of democratic ones, calling no democracy anywhere, anywhere, including at home, and now risking major confrontation with Russia. Indeed, that's what the book I edited and contributed to the book highlighted. The notion that Washington can rampage anywhere it wishes, they can oust any independent government it wants, it can replace them with stooge governments. It can surround Russia and China with U.S. bases. It can make NATO a global military. It's already a killing machine. It wants it made a global killing machine, waging war on humanity, risking humanity's survival. This is the American agenda. This is what deserves universal opposition. The Ukraine book discusses it. My articles discuss it. The threat is real. The menace is horrendous. It goes on nonstop. U.S. tax dollars don't go for what people need. Popular interests, they go begging. War and humanity persists. It threatens to become global war. It threatens humanity's survival. Read Flashpoint in Ukraine. The book is superb because of the people who contributed to it, around 22 in all. Some of them world figures. They're all my friends and allies. And the book is cheap. Amazon is selling it dirt cheap. The last time I checked, it was about $14.95. Clarity Press, my publisher, priced it at $24.95. I think it's worth double that price, but you can buy it for a song at Amazon, and I'm sure there are used copies available. You probably can buy it for $10 or less. What a steal. Know the real Ukraine story. Know the big lies that are being told. Know the way you're being duped. Not just Americans, people everywhere. Know the risk. Know the threat of global war. Know the threat of humanity's annihilation. Know the fact that only ordinary people can stop what absolutely must be stopped, or heaven help us. It's either us from the grassroots up, or it's the risk of Armageddon. And that's what's going on. And when Washington denounces Moscow for delivering humanitarian aid and promises, quote-unquote, consequences, do they mean more sanctions? Do they mean belligerence? Do they mean other hostile actions? Do they mean direct belligerent confrontation? Do they mean potentially risking war? Don't bet they don't mean that. Don't bet they don't risk World War III. We had World War I. It was called the war to end all wars. It sure didn't when 20 years later, World War II came along. And Einstein said he didn't know what World War III weapons would be, but World War IV, if it's fought, would be with sticks and stones. And Admiral Hyman Rickover, whom I quoted in testimony to Congress 30 years ago, said, in war, nations will use every weapon at their disposal to win. They'll use only what they have to. They won't use what they don't need to do. They won't use nuclear weapons if they can defeat an adversary without them. But if they fight an adversary like Russia, if America fights an adversary like Russia or China, if Rickover is right, and I believe he is, then America will use everything at its disposal. Israel has said that in plain Hebrew. If its welfare is threatened enough, if its security is threatened, it will use all its weapons, including its nuclear, chemical, and biological arsenal. I have no doubt it will. I have no doubt America will. I have no doubt if this happens, it's curtains. And that's the threat that's faced. America, I've said it so often in articles, is headed, its policies are heading it toward full-scale confrontation with Russia. That means war at some point. Small ones can turn into big ones. Big ones can turn into global ones. Global ones can turn into the end of humanity. There were crazies back in the old days. There were crazies back in the Kennedy days. Kennedy wanted nothing to do with them. I'm old enough to remember Curtis LeMay, General, World War II, Korea, Vietnam. He wanted Russia bombed back to the Stone Age while America had the advantage. Kennedy wanted none of it. I believe LeMay and another general like him attended a Security Council meeting in the early 1960s, and they preached this gospel of war on Russia. And Kennedy did what a U.S. president never would do, certainly would never do today. In fury, he got up and he stormed out of the meeting, and he later said he wanted nothing to do with these people. He had no intention of going to war with Russia. He point-blank said, after the Cuban Missile Crisis, that he absolutely had no intention of bombing Russia, no intention of war with Russia. Things looked mighty bleak back then, and I remember them very well. The missiles of October 1962, it wasn't long after that, that Kennedy saw his end days come around. And it certainly wasn't at the hands of Lee Harvey Oswald. Nor did Bobby Kennedy succumb the same way, or Martin Luther King. State-sponsored terrorism did them all in. Kennedy died because he had lots of things he wanted to do. He wanted to end the war in Vietnam, and that was the most serious offense. He wanted all youth. He wanted 1,000 U.S. troops withdrawn, I believe, by the end of 1963. He wanted them all out, I believe, by the end of 1964. That was intolerable. He had to go. He was murdered. Johnson took over, the Vietnam War cranked up. It didn't end until April 1975. U.S. troops, the final ones, left from the rooftop of the Saigon embassy in ignominious defeat. But it took 10 years of sustained trouble, sustained struggle, ordinary Americans protesting on college campuses elsewhere to end the war. They wanted nothing to do with it. The biggest difference between now and then were those protests, sustained, committed, and the fact that we had a draft back then, and now we have volunteer forces, and we have a Main Street Depression going on, and a lot of young kids are suckered into entering the military for benefits they'll never get. Free education, health care, you know the promises made. They're made, they're broken, the people are denied, they come back traumatized with PTSD, with limbs blown off, denied the care they need at the VA. All the major promises broken. Well, there was anger in the ranks because of a constricted force back in the 60s and the 1970s, and the U.S. military was scared. But even being scared, it took them all those years to finally decide the war would end, and indeed it did. And along the way, in the 1960s, Defense Secretary Rob McNamara told Lyndon Johnson there was no way that America would defeat the Vietnam forces. They could not be defeated, and I believe he said that as early as 1965. He wrote a book about it afterwards. And Lyndon Johnson, in conversation with his best friend from his Senate days, Richard Russell, the senator from Georgia, he said he was damned. He told Russell he was damned if he did and damned if he didn't. He couldn't win the war, and if he pulled out, he'd be impeached. And he asked Russell for his advice. What should he do? And Russell had no idea. We know what happened to Johnson, or we should. I remember the day in February 1968 when he went on national television. I was eating dinner with my family. He said he would not run and would not accept the nomination for another term. February 1968. Richard Nixon was elected. Johnson showed up a few years later. He was a shadow of his former self. I forget what age he died at. What happened took its toll on him. He showed up gray and haggard for a particular meeting. I don't recall what it was about, but I remember the image of him from a bigger-than-life figure who could look down anybody, nose to nose, literally, practically touching noses, to a man, again, who was a shadow of his former self, who would die a few years later. He had himself to blame. Shed no tears for Lyndon Johnson. Like Nixon, he left a trail of mass killing and destruction. And it sure didn't end with him. It picked up in short order. In the 1980s, in the 1990s, Reagan's wars, Clinton's wars, proxy wars, direct wars, the post-9/11 wars, Bush 2's wars, Obama's wars, the post-9/11 ones, it's hard to pick the worst ones. Over a sustained period, the post-9/11 ones were probably the worst. But don't discount the Korean War, Harry Truman's war, 3-4 million North Koreans murdered in cold blood, Reagan's war in Vietnam. I'm sorry, Reagan's wars around the world. Indeed, the Vietnam Wars. The wars in Central America, Bush 1's wars against the people of Iraq, against the people of Panama, Bush 2's wars against Iraq, against Afghanistan, Obama's wars, we know about them, including the Libya war, the third Iraq war, the proxy wars, you never hear anything about. The ones that go on in Yemen, in Somalia, in other places, across the Middle East, in other parts of the world. The fact that U.S. Special Forces killers operate in at least 120 countries on a worldwide basis. CIA operatives operate everywhere, and they don't show up as goodwill ambassadors. This is the American agenda. The quest for global dominance leaves a trail of mass slaughter and destruction. It goes on nonstop. Democracy is verboten. Unchallenged global control is America's agenda. And it goes on everywhere, in league with rogue NATO partners, in league with Israel, in league with all the EU countries, in league with the Eastern European ones, the former Soviet republics. Ordinary people suffer the most. When it'll end, who knows? How many people will die? It's in the multi-millions. Don't even bother going back to the roots of American history. Don't go back to the roots of slaughtering 95% of Native Americans. 95% or more of them. Countless millions of black people brought over as slaves in the Middle Passage. Countless millions of them who perished, whose lives were snuffed out. The fact that this country has a record unmatched in human history. It's all documented. Anybody can look it up and check it and learn the truth. It's been at war every year in its history since 1776. In fact, before 1776, either at home or abroad or both. Not one year in U.S. history was a year of peace. Not a single year. There isn't another country in human history with a record like that. If that doesn't discount its democratic roots, I don't know what does. How many millions died? Tens of millions. Many millions since post 9/11 alone. Many die daily today. Most are defenseless civilians. It doesn't matter where they are. They're in harm's way when juggernaut America wants total control. And don't bet mass slaughter can't happen on U.S. soil. The Posse Comitatus Act was revoked. America can deploy U.S. forces on its own territory. America can target anybody it wants, anywhere in the world, including U.S. citizens. It can either lock them up in prisons, uncharged, and leave them there to rot forever, or it can murder them in cold blood. It can torture them. It can treat them any way it wishes. And who'll intervene to stop them? Who'll intervene? Who'll intervene against Obama? Who'll fight for democratic rights? Who'll stop wars of aggression? Who'll fight for freedoms too precious to lose? The only chance to save and restore them is for ordinary people at the grassroots to say no more. It'll never happen any other way. It'll never happen at the ballot box. The only thing you get by throwing out the bums is new bums. America has a one-party state. It's controlled by moneyed interests. Democrats and Republicans are two sides of the same coin. They represent the same interests. Their rhetoric differs. Their policies are similar on issues mattering most. Corporate power, wars of aggression, a police state apparatus at home. The only way to change it is not at the ballot box. The only way to change it is by nonviolent resistance. If it was okay for Henry David Thoreau, if it was okay for Ralph Waldo Emerson, if it was okay for Martin Luther King, then it's okay for us. Tolerating the intolerable is a crime. Going all out to remove it nonviolently is an obligation. We all have an obligation to end tyranny in America. It won't end any other way. And the tyranny we have today is heading for full-blown on a scale much worse than now. Either we end it, or they end the last freedoms we have. There's no in-between. It's what I devote every day to. Every day as an unpaid writer, as an unpaid radio host, as an unpaid guest on other programs. This is my time of life to give back, and thankfully I'm back in good enough health to be back on my 2-article-a-day routine. Today I have a chance maybe to get out 3. I'll see if I have enough time before the program ends. Let me just go to my blog site for a minute. All my articles are on my blog site. You can access them easily by just Googling my last name. Google my last name. They're all there. Oh, let me just tell you what I wrote about the last few days. I've been obsessing over Ukraine and over Gaza. Absolutely obsessing about them. Well, of course, I was involved in a book on Ukraine, so that becomes a major, major topic for me. Gaza is the other major topic. On the 22nd, I wrote about a pro-Israeli Security Council resolution that demands rejection. A Security Council resolution that wants to deny Hamas in Gaza, but really all Palestinians, their inalienable rights, as I like to put it. I wrote about Russian humanitarian aid reaching Lugansk. I wrote about Israel murdering journalists. I wrote about Israel murdering targeting human rights workers. I wrote about Israel targeting medical workers in Gaza, preventing them from delivering badly needed medical care to Gazans. Israel is trying to murder and are injuring severely. I wrote about irresponsible Putin bashing escalating. I wrote about Obama heading for war on Syria. I wrote about Israel's genocidal killing machine. I wrote about police brutality in America. I wrote about Israel obstructing ceasefire in Gaza, absolutely refusing it, prioritizing violence and instability, and refusing to negotiate responsibly for peace. Why Hamas bent over backwards to do it, Israel refused to do it. It abhors peace. It prioritizes violence and instability. There is no chance for peace in Gaza because Israel simply won't tolerate giving Palestinians, either in Gaza or the West Bank, fundamental international law guaranteed rights. Israel refuses to grant them. How can there be peace under conditions like that? At least Palestinians have freedom fighters courageous enough to stand up and fight a brutal system. And Ukrainians have the same ones. And Americans, they'd rather watch football. They'd rather go shopping. They'd rather go to the movies. They'd rather go to lie in the sun. They'd rather do most anything but protect their own welfare. So they get the government they deserve. What'll happen in Palestine, what'll happen in Ukraine, remains to be seen. But someday, somehow, if these struggles are maintained, then I believe these people will be free. I've said it on this program before, and I'll say it again. There's a wonderful quote from the famous former muckraking U.S. journalist I.F. Stone, who passed away about 25 years ago. His quote was very, very long. I don't recall it verbatim, but basically he said this: the only battles worth fighting are the ones we'll lose. The ones we'll lose. Because if we fight them, and we pass the baton to others who'll fight them, and they lose them, and they pass the baton to others who may lose them, and they pass the baton, and this goes on, and it continues going on, then one day it'll pass on into the hands of freedom-fighting Democrats who win because of the foundation that was laid by the people who came ahead of them, and they made it possible for real democracy to be instituted that never would have happened without the sacrifices they made. And that's what's happening in Ukraine. And that's what's happening in Palestine. And that's what's not happening in America. And unless it does, then Americans will never enjoy freedom. The few ones they have are eroding in plain sight. Tyranny is replacing it. The only way to reverse it is to put our bodies on the line for real freedom. That's my commitment in what I do every day. It's the way I want to devote the end years of my life. I do it in writing. I do it on this program. I do it as guests on other programs. And I don't give a damn what the dark forces say. I don't give a damn what they try to do to me. They can do what they please, but they won't take me down on my knees. If they want to take me down, they know the way they'll have to do it. I wondered if they did something to me to cause the very rough illness I went through. Maybe they did. Somehow I came back. I'm back well enough for now. I hope I can stay back, because this is what I want to do on the side of everybody who deserves freedom, not just Americans, everybody. We all deserve to be free. We all deserve governments of, by, and for serving everyone equitably and free at all times. We deserve a lot better than we're getting. That is for sure. But the only way that's possible is if we do it for ourselves. Never can it be any other way. And it doesn't take a great majority to do it. As Larry Pinkney said, quoting Margaret Mead on this program, it's in the archives, recorded a couple of days ago, it takes only a few people to change the world, committed people, sustained people, and her tagline was, it's the only way change ever happens. It never happens any other way, and it never will. But it can, and it's happened many times, if ordinary people decide they won't take it anymore. We can turn America into the America it's supposed to be. But wishing won't make it so. Heaven help us if we don't try to do it that way. Whatever is going on now, I believe will only get worse. I believe Obama exceeds the worst of George Bush. I've written about his record in detail. He's a war criminal multiple times over. He's a serial liar. He's a moral coward. He broke every major promise he made. He deserves to be impeached. He deserves to be prosecuted. He belongs in prison. He can be there if ordinary people want to put him there. America can have what it really deserves if ordinary America decides to work for it. Again, it's what I devote my time to, and I simply can't imagine living my life any other way. Well, I'm lucky in one respect. I'm retired. I just turned age 80. I don't have to go to work every day. My family has grown up. I can put in all the time I wish on whatever endeavors I choose, and this is the one that matters most to me. It's give back time, as I like to say. And hopefully I can make a difference for others. It gives me joy to do it. And I simply can't imagine spending my days doing anything else. After working on restoring my health, the thing that bothered me most while I was ill was being unable to write, unable to host this program, unable to be guests on other programs, unable to tell people what I think they need to know, unable to do anything outside of time spent on therapy and eating, the most exciting moments of my day, was either stare at the walls and ceiling or television I deplored so much. The set was mostly mostly put on mute with the video on to look like I had a guest in my room with lips moving, but I can't read them. It was better than blank walls. Not a whole lot better, but a little better. And that's the way I spent over 2 months. My home never looked so good when I arrived. And straight away, I knew what I'd write about. And indeed, I did. Explaining to people about my absence, writing a little bit about the things I wish I could have been writing about, but wasn't able to, but jumped right into as soon as I got back. The day after I got back, the first day, I straightened myself out a little bit and began writing on the second day, and I've been writing ever since. Now back to 2 articles a day, and again today I may do 3. It's my joy. It truly is my joy. I look forward every day to doing this. I simply can't imagine getting up and turning on a television set. Even with all the choices I have at home, which are many more than the few I had, hospitalized and during rehab, very few. Nothing worth watching, I assure you. The ones I have at home, I get RT International, as a matter of fact. But anybody can watch RT online, can watch Press TV online. No Press T on my cable lineup. And the cable lineup isn't one I choose. It's the one my building chooses, and I have no choice. You can either get it or have no television altogether. I mean, literally, you just get a blank screen with static or screen saying no access allowed, something like that. That's what you get. But again, we have no choice. But aside from RT International, and a rare good movie that comes on, and indeed rare, there's nothing on worth watching. Certainly not the scoundrel media, as I like to call them, or the BBC. We get BBC. We get Al Jazeera America, controlled by Qatar. BBC, of course, controlled by the British government. America's scoundrel media, controlled, in effect, by the U.S. government. Propaganda machines, managed news misinformation, cable channels around the clock, 24/7. People thinking they're getting real information. They get nothing but around the clock garbage, or as Larry Pinkney calls it, vomit. Indeed, so we deserve better, like on PRN, like on other alternative media. Real news and information people need to know, the truth. All of it. Big lies excluded. You'll certainly get that on this program. You'll certainly get it in my articles. You'll certainly get it in my books. Check out PRN. Check out this radio program on a full-time basis. Read my articles. I hope you'll read my books. I hope you'll come back and listen. Every Sunday live, on Thursdays, I record 2 other programs. They're in the archives, either same day or the next day, with wonderful guests. Again, telling people what they need to know, the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. We can do a lot the more we know. We can win the freedoms we deserve. And indeed, I hope ordinary people will spend a little time, no matter what else their obligations are, their work obligations, their family obligations. We all had them. I had them. There's always time. There's always time to do the right thing. There was time for me. There's time for everyone listening to this program. And if we don't do the right thing, we'll end up with a situation where it may be too late to restore the freedoms we've lost. And that's the threat we face today. Freedoms are fast eroding. Tyranny is replacing them. Obama heads a police state apparatus. Our freedoms are being destroyed in plain sight. And if anybody doesn't believe it, read the kind of material that shows up on my blog. Read what other people, truth tellers, have to say. Follow PRN, follow Press TV, follow RT International, boycott the scoundrel media, understand the threat we face, understand it's up to us to change things, understand if we don't, heaven help the future we face. Heaven helps the welfare we've lost. I remember quoting a former U.S. four-star general who said, they'll all be gone in the wake of the next false flag 9/11 style attack. He didn't put it exactly in those words, but that's what he meant. Another 9/11 in any form, America's remaining freedoms will all be lost, and full-blown tyranny will replace it. And the sad part is that Americans will accept it in the name of security, not realizing, as Benjamin Franklin once said, When you give up security for a little freedom, you end up losing both. We're very close to that state now. And another major attack, which I believe almost for certain is coming, when and in what form, I don't know, but I believe it's coming. And in its wake, expect the few remaining freedoms to be gone, with the full support of the American public, thinking it's in their interest to see it happen, not realizing that the cloud of tyranny has taken over their lives. And soon enough, they'll realize what maybe they unwittingly gave up and what may be too late to restore. We'll be on again next Sunday. Michael, I don't know what happened. I hope you're not ill. I'll get back and email him. I'll get him rescheduled on the program. I really look forward to having Michael come on, especially since he was a contributor to the Ukraine book. But Michael does such extraordinary work that I wanted to hear his views on the major issues of the day, including Ukraine, including Gaza, including Obama's new war on Iraq, including the horrors going on in America, the tyranny going on in Ferguson, Missouri, that's a microcosm against America's racist war against its most vulnerable people that goes way beyond blacks and Latinos. It's America's poor. It's America's non-privileged. It goes on every single day with shock troops against ordinary people with no qualms about killing them and with no recourse when it happens. Join me again next Sunday. Listen to the archive programs. Make it a regular habit, as I used to say. I'm getting back in the groove. This program is back on. I'm glad, while I was absent, there were archive repeats broadcast. Now I'm back on live. I hope for a very, very long time to come. Again, I repeat, make it a regular habit. Tell your friends. Hear the truth. Hear all of it, unvarnished, and nothing but the truth every time. My great thanks.